Okay, time for some music from 1992. I'm talking about a couple of bands who made some of their best work in 1992. People who made great work in 92 and also other years might get talked about later. We'll see. Welcome to Just Ace, a podcast about the 90s Australian alternative music scene, whatever the hell that means. This week, it's all about Tumbleweed, Underground Lovers, Def FX, and weddings, parties, anything. The subtitle to this entire season of Just Ace could really be The Search for Australia's Nirvana. Nirvana had shown everyone that there was money in this indie rock stuff, and a hungry audience that wanted more music that sounded like it. As is always the case in Australia, when there's an international phenomenon, there is a race to find the local version. There were plenty of Australian Beatles, countless Australian punk bands, and soon, countless Australian answers to Nirvana. One of the first of many bands to be called the Australian Nirvana was Tumbleweed, who came from Wollongong, an hour and a half south of Sydney, along the coast. They definitely looked the part, all long hair and heavy riffs, and they fit in with grunge. Even the fact that they didn't come from a big city tied them to the Nirvana vibe, who originally came from this small mysterious place called Seattle. Tumbleweed were formed from another band called Proton Energy Pills. That band featured three brothers with the surname Curly and a drummer named Richie Lewis and a songwriter named Stuart Cunningham. But unlike other Australian brother bands like the Bee Gees, the Curly brothers didn't sit around working on their delicate harmonies. Proton Energy Pills rocked. They released two singles and an EP on Waterfront. But that band broke up and Cunningham left to form his own band, Brother Brick. The others remained as a band, and after some shuffling, by 1992, they were brothers Jason and Lenny Curly, Paul Hausmeister, Steve O'Brien, and Richie Lewis, who rounded out the band on vocals, switching from drums. They called themselves Tumbleweed and were essentially a new band. I can't think of any puns or double meaning in the band's name of Tumbleweed. Like the Protons, Tumbleweed signed to Waterfront Records, one of the big 80s Australian indie labels who were trying to figure out what to do in the 90s. Ruard had come along and stolen Rat Cat off the label, and Waterfront weren't going to let another big star escape. Tumbleweed was one of their first big chances. Mark Arm of Mudhoney fame was a fan and produced a single called Captain's Log when he was touring Australia. The track was then sent to grunge mecca Seattle for Nirvana producer Jack Endino to mix. It all added to the idea that this was a piece of Seattle right here in Australia. Here's Tumbleweed's debut single, Captain's Log, first released in 1991 on Waterfront. Possibly a bigger coup was Tumbleweed scoring the support for Nirvana's Australian dates when they came here for the big day out. That was enough to get you on the international radar, and a visiting A&R person for the US major label Atlantic Records wanted to hear more. The band and Waterfront set up a last-minute short set at Sydney's seminal indie pub, The Hopeton. It led to a deal with Atlantic Records. It wasn't the best contract in the world. In fact, it may have been one of the worst. It tied the band for a lot of albums with very little guarantees, but it meant some US distribution and a foothold to global stardom. For Atlantic, it was no risk. If the band could make a hit, they would make a lot of money. If they didn't, Atlantic were barely obligated to do anything at all. It's easy to see why, in the year of grunge, Tumbleweed was snapped up by some proactive US record exec. Like I said, the band looked right. All stoner long hair and youthful male energy, they fit in with Soundgarden, Nirvana, and that Seattle scene. Second, they sounded right. The guitars were heavy, yet inventive. The lyrics were muffled, but Richie's voice had the growl that radio wanted. But even though the band looked right and sounded right, it was unheard of that a band from Wollongong would sign a deal with a US major label, even a bad deal. But that's what started to happen in the 90s. There was a lot of money flying around. Tumbleweed's self-titled debut album was released in 1992. It's certainly one of the very best debut Australian albums to air guitar to, with so much inventive noodling throughout. It says a lot about how confident the band were at this point that their debut album wasn't a collection of already released singles. They had enough new material and wanted to move forward. In interviews, with some amount of youthful bravado, they talked up how much their new material was better than their old stuff. Opening track Sundial was typical of the band at this time. It was rock in a bit of a stoner vein, but with a catchy hook. It sounded great against a 90s music video with a swirling camera and strange colours, whilst long-haired men headbanged in an exotic-looking location. It charted at number 35 in the Australian charts, their highest so far for a single. You can tell it's an independent release because if a rich major label had ownership and oversight, there would be no way that they would let this track be called anything other than Mary Jane. That's the hook, and people probably refer to it as that Mary Jane song. But no, indie be indie. So here's Tumbleweed with their 1992 self-titled debut album with the song that should have been called Mary Jane, Here's Sundial, released, of course, on Waterfront Records. Listening to it today, the 1992 self-titled Tumbleweed is a very 1992 album. When the album slows down, it really depends on how much you love early 90s stoner rock. But the best moments for me are the urgent rockers like Healer and God, which still sound wonderful. The constant touring and hard work brought Tumbleweed a new audience. The Tumbleweed album showed that they deserved that audience. The album charted at number 48 in the ARIA charts. With international deals in place, Tumbleweed toured Europe and the US. Although the band got to see the world, they were lost in the shuffle almost immediately. There was an explosion of new bands everywhere they went. There were a lot of new rock bands in 1992, and worse still, Atlantic Records didn't think that debut album was strong enough to release. They would drop the band shortly after. Tumbleweed released one more single on Waterfront, the excellent Daddy Long Legs in 1993, which made the Hottest 100 at number 50. He's Daddy Long Legs by Tumbleweed. Having tried to go down the Waterfront indie road with no success, Tumbleweed changed course and signed directly to major label Polydor. Their major label debut was 1995's Galactophonic. There was no big name overseas producer for the album. It was produced by Australian Paul McKercher, who had worked with Clouds and The Cruel Sea. There was also no big budget film clip either. Wasn't a major label deal supposed to get you that stuff? Still, Galactophonic is a little bit more fun than that 1992 self-titled debut. It was a little shinier, and that was probably an attempt to get some airplay. But it also meant it was a little bit more likeable. The first single was Hang Around, which snuck in at number 96 in the Triple J Hottest 100 of 1995, and number 48 in the regular singles charts. The album debuted at number 6, their only top 10 album. Here's that first single, Hang Around by Tumbleweed. We'll be right back. but Galactophonic didn't see an overseas release. It seems with that record that Tumbleweed wanted to consolidate their Australian fanbase. They had been burnt overseas, and whilst there, they risked being forgotten back home. So they played a lot of local tours, including several Big Day Out festivals. Return to Earth, their third album, followed just 14 months later in 1996. That album was just shy of the top 10, coming in at number 11. It was once again produced by Paul McKercher. McKercher, in 95-96, had worked on albums by Spider-Mate, Magic Dirt, UMI, The Cruel Sea, and many more. It's a pretty incredible run. Return to Earth featured the wonderful Silver Lizard, which made it to number 59 in the Triple J Hottest 100 of 1996. It was their best chart position of that countdown. From their album Return to Earth, here's Tumbleweed with Silver Lizard. But the big commercial breakthrough never came. After years of hard work, the band started to fray in the late 90s. There were some side projects, including the Hot Rollers, a band formed by Richie Lewis with Cram from Spiderbait. Both their mums were hairdressers, you see. They released one self-titled album of great psych rock nonsense with two killer singles. As this is a Tumbleweed feature, here's the single that features more of Richie. It's the pop-tastic Wickerman's Shoes by the Hot Rollers.
20 past 2, I'll be there for you. What you wanna do? I wanna know if you're ready to go. I don't care if you feel alone. 20 past 3, waiting there for me. Where you wanna be? You wanna know if I'm going to show. I don't care if you stay at home. 'Cause you're alive.
Tumbleweed made one more major label album, 2000's Mumbo Jumbo, but that failed to chart and Triple J didn't really play it. They broke up in 2001. Whether it was before or after they were dropped by Polydor, it kinda didn't matter. However, they reformed in 2009, playing a few shows and released a reunion album called Sounds from the Other Side. Sadly, Jay Curley died in 2014. But the band carried on and still make new music. Like a lot of bands, they survived and they occasionally get together and have fun. I really like Tumbleweed, but I think I'd probably like them more if I was the kind of person who knew if there was any sort of double entendre in their name. By the mid-90s, they were kind of everywhere. They just seemed like there was always another song on the radio. They were always touring and always hanging around. Maybe they did too much, or maybe each album wasn't marketed enough as an event, or as something different. It was just Tumbleweed. You know those guys. Well, here they are again. The music still sounds pretty great, especially Galactophonic and Return to Earth, which doesn't sound as time-stamped to grunge as their debut album. But that first record is great too, bar a couple of slow instrumentals. Sure, the lyrics were always a bit juvenile and silly, but when they were slow and serious, it didn't work as well as when they were rocking the hell out, singing about spiders or being chased by a giant chicken in the Hang Around film clip. Some of my favourite Tumbleweed songs are the non-album singles. Daddy Longlegs is a riff that would make Black Sabbath proud. The 1998 standalone single Fang It is another heap of fun, sped up. But really, they were a band that made sense on stage. Five dudes with fantastic long hair and very loud guitars. Richie in particular cut a great figure. Two hands on a straight mic stand, singing close while his entire face was covered with hair. That's how Richie Lewis will always look in my mind. The band must have gotten their rights back as they've been reissuing all their albums. There's an expensive singles box set that in 2023, the band collected into a one-disc vinyl called Killer Weed. It misses a couple of singles, but otherwise it's a great starting point. To end, here's the great Tumbleweed single Fang It, first released in 1998.
Take me on a walk. Take me on the wildest spree. We could stop for days, my love. You and I across the sea. Love that comes in waves.
According to Melbourne's Underground Lovers, they took their name from an obscure Italian play. I always loved that name and the mystery it brought. They were a little different from the rest of the Melbourne scene and the alternative rock of the decade in general. In Melbourne, where everyone thought they were Nick Cave, and still do, Underground Lovers leaned more towards the dance and electronica side of indie, taking inspiration from bands like New Order and The Cure. They were at home using synths as well as real drums. They could get heavy, but I don't know if they cared to be RAWK rock. The band began as a recording outlet for Glenn Benny and Vincent Giaruso, who had been friends since their early teens. They would be joined by Richard Andrew, Marisa Giro, and Philippa Neal, on drums, bass and keys. They self-funded and recorded a self-titled debut album that won an ARIA Award for Best Independent Release in 1991. And instead of going to the award ceremony, they played a gig at the Annandale Hotel instead. The album also came out in the UK in 1991, and by then, they bothered to give it a name, Get to Notice. But really, the band's reputation lies in the albums that followed that debut. Because by 1992's Leaves Me Blind, they had developed by leaps and bounds. Leaves Me Blind was produced by Wayne Connolly, who at the time was in the band The Welcome Mat and would go on to produce some of the finest albums of the decade. On Leaves Me Blind, the band found their groove, literally. They let their song lengths go, and their sets could be as little as six songs with a 15-minute version of the powerful Your Eyes. It was mercifully reduced to 8 minutes on the album, and a remix was even released as a single. It reached number 83 in the Triple J Hottest 100 of 1993. Here's Your Eyes by Underground Lovers from their 1992 album, Leaves Me Blind.
When I wake up, I see you sleeping. My eyes don't focus, and I wanna die.
Leaves Me Blind was a big step up for the band, and their dance rock was given an emotional makeover. The album has a great desperation and urgency. The guitars were heavy and the atmosphere was raw. A lot of the performances were first takes, and it has the feel of a live recording at times. It also didn't sound much like anything else on the Australian music scene. It wasn't peppy acoustic pop or heavy guitar grunge. Leaves Me Blind was released by major label Polydor, who would also sign Tumbleweed, Spiderbait, The Fauves, and more. It was picked up for a one-off release in the UK on the supercool indie 4AD. Leaves Me Blind was included in the book 100 Best Australian Albums, coming in at number 54, although it didn't bother the Australian charts. Leaves Me Blind is a fantastic, well-loved album, and the band supported The Cure, My Bloody Valentine, and Lush. There was critical acclaim everywhere they went. As probably someone said to them at the time, they were going to be big. Underground Lovers followed up Leaves Me Blind with the album Dream It Down in 1994, and for my money, it's the better album. More lush and lovely, the band moved deliberately away from the fierce attack of Leaves Me Blind to something softer. It also featured new drummer Derek Nguyen. Dream It Down was a tough album to make, just how tough seems to change in every interview, but they started work with Wayne Connolly again and were unhappy with the results. They scrapped the entire album and started again, this time with producing group Filthy Lucre, who had a hit remix of Yothu Yindi's Treaty a couple of years earlier and had been part of the pioneering electronic music group Essendon Airport. But it doesn't seem like they scrapped everything, and it seems like some songs were remixed and re-edited. Whatever the surgery, the operation was a success. Dream It Down is lush and detailed compared to Leave Me Blind's raw gangfight drama. The album featured their biggest hit, Losing It, which got to number 19 in the Triple J Hottest 100 and even broke into the regular top 100 singles charts, just at number 93. It would be their only single to ever disturb the charts. Here's Losing It by Underground Lovers. Dream It Down is Underground Lovers' best album. They were a great live band, but they wanted to make something different on record. So many bands from this era and this level are just trying to capture their live set to tape. Underground Lovers were already more ambitious. The lovelier, lush feel really pays off. The album made it to number 55 in the ARIA charts and was voted the Australian Album of the Year by Triple J listeners. Being part of a multinational record company meant that the album was also released in Japan and the US. But having worked so hard on the album that they recorded it twice, the US version of Dream It Down was a mix of tracks from Leaves Me Blind and Dream It Down. And it didn't include the hit Your Eyes and featured a different album cover. It was a bit of raw shoegazing stuff and then some warm dream pop. Plenty of great music, but it wasn't a coherent album, and it failed to do much of anything in the US. Despite Dream It Down's success, things were not going well between the band and the label. It's unclear if there was a breaking point, but in 1995, a year after Dream It Down, the band left Polydor. They always refer to it as their decision, but I can't imagine any record company would let a band go so easily. The band felt stifled in the system, and this was a band who were not afraid to scrap an entire album on the way to a vision. Like many of the bands in the early 90s, they wanted to record more, but record companies were asking bands to slow down. It's funny to read in interviews the band's frustration at having to wait 2 years to make an album, because by the end of the 90s, making an album a year was unheard of. The mangled US track listing kind of helped the relationship. Polydor, surely on their side, was seeing money go down the drain and a band that was difficult to work with, and their acclaimed albums were hardly hits. The label wanted to throw more money at the band, including getting a big-name producer, to which the band said no. If they didn't want to play the major label game, then what were they doing here in the first place? And by then, Polydor had bigger stars like Spiderbait and Powderfinger to focus on. So Underground Lovers left Polydor. Now, it's important to remember that in 1995, this was kind of unheard of. Post-Nirvana, the point was to get from an indie label to a major label. Getting dropped by a major in the 90s kind of meant your career was over. It probably meant you'd lose your manager, your booking agents, and your team. It more often than not meant that you broke up. There was no support network for bands to get back from a major to an indie in the mid-90s. But this wasn't so for Underground Lovers. They formed their own label with the help of Melbourne music lawyer David Vodica, who ran Rubber Records, Actually, they technically started their own label Run Through Rubber, and considering everything they've been through, they gave it the ironic name of Mainstream Recordings. The fact that they were from Melbourne and could go back to that city's welcoming live scene gave them a base. Unlike, say, Frente or Ratcat, they never had the level of success that made the indie kids turn on them. They managed to survive leaving a major label. Most bands don't. It was a bit of a pioneering move. Their first album as a second-time indie band was 1996's Rushall Station, with Wayne Connolly back as producer. It's not as lush as Dream It Down, but it was a declaration that they planned to stick around. Takes You Back was the single, and it sounds almost as raw as a conventional rock record. Here's Underground Lovers with Takes You Back. Rushall Station was back to basics and recorded on the cheap. It's so cheap that the album cover is screenshots from the Beautiful World video, a song from their last album, which was surely paid for by Polydor. Yet, I really like the album cover. It's actually not that often that you see photos of people playing real instruments on an album cover. But Rushall Station, which was named after the train station that served Fitzroy North in Melbourne, didn't bother the charts. Oddly enough, the band kind of ended back on a major label for distribution when Rubber Records signed a deal with BMG. They released one album in that deal called Ways to Burn, but by then Philippa left and Maurice would follow. One more album rounded out the 90s. It was called Cold Feeling, and only Glenn and Vincent were on every track. Those last two albums really embraced electronica and saw the band working with artists like Sonic Animation. Cold Feeling was released on the short-lived Reliant Records, run by Ogogo's Bruce Milne. Cold Feeling, the song, got some play on Triple J, but it didn't make the Hottest 100 or did it chart. Here's Cold Feeling by Underground Lovers. By the end of the decade, Underground Lovers was essentially Glenn and Vincent, just like how it began. Previously, they had done some remixes and stuff as a pair away from Underground Lovers, but everyone else had fallen away. Vincent would take time away from the band to work on More Boy, a 2001 independent film that he wrote and directed. Underground Lovers, but mainly Glenn and Vincent himself, created the soundtrack as well. It's wonderful, and I use a lot of it as background music for this podcast. But that was mostly it for Underground Lovers, who would break up the next year in 2002. Of course, like everyone else, they got back together. Since 2013, they've released another three albums on Rubber Records. There has been reissues of their classic catalogue, and the original Leaves Me Blind era of the band seems to be an ongoing concern. They survived leaving a major label, and unlike so many early 90s bands, have survived the decades as well, and are making new music. Sometimes on this podcast, I will say stuff like, this album or that album sounds great, and 99% of the time there is an unsaid asterisk. That asterisk denotes that the album sounds great for the 90s era, or recorded on a modest budget, or if you were kind of into that stuff, or maybe if you grew up with it. Dream It Down is the other 1%, and Rushall Station and Leaves Me Blind are also pretty close. Just beautiful albums that sound wonderful today with no disclaimers. Maybe it's because the sound of grunge ended up being a fad and Underground Lovers tapped into a more 80s electronica rock hybrid that didn't date so much. Because I'm an utter wussbag, I prefer Dreamer Down and Rush Hour Station to Leaves Me Blind. Leaves Me Blind is great and considered by many to be their best. I just prefer the sweeter stuff. You might be tougher than me. You might be a base jumper. I don't know. And if you are, Leaves Me Blind is right there. Go listen to all three. There is a retrospective called Wonderful Things that features most of their recognisable works from the 90s on the first disc. It's banger after banger. I'm annoyed it's in random track order, but hey, you can't have everything. To end, a track from the Wonderful Things retrospective and from their album Dream It Down, here's Underground Lovers with Recognize. Def FX were one of the most successful indie bands in Australia circa early 90s, but they are forgotten these days, it seems, for a number of reasons. Firstly, singer Fiona Horn's career took off in ways beyond music. Def FX at times seems like it's just one thing that this person once did. Second, the type of music they were making just didn't catch on, so history left them behind. Still, they were huge for a while in the 90s and showed the variety of the Australian music scene before it all closed down again. Def FX formed in 1990 with Fiona Horn as charismatic frontwoman, Sean Lowry on keyboards, Martin Basher on bass, and Blake Gardner on guitar. Horn was no newbie, playing in various indie bands in the 80s, including The Mothers, who had a couple of singles on Waterfront. Def FX, though, immediately set themselves apart by playing heavy guitars mixed with electronica. It's all there in their first single, and one of their biggest hits, Surfers of the Mind. It was on their debut EP called Water, released on Phantom Records in 1991. Here's Def FX with Surfers of the Mind. Def FX sounded, at the time, incredibly modern. I mean, it sounds incredibly dated now, but that date isn't 1991/1992, it's more like 1998. It's not a million kilometres away from Marilyn Manson. Def FX were also helped by their incredibly wild frontwoman Fiona Horn, who was able to go nuts because their songs were always so high energy. They are sometimes referred to as electronic surf rock. I'm not sure where the surf bit comes from, other than the fact that they had a song about surfing in the mind, and they look kinda like beach kids. At other times, they were called industrial rock. That Water EP was the first of three EPs they released in 91 and 92, all on Phantom Records. All three of them made it to number one in the Australian Alternative Singles chart. Water was the second highest selling alternative single of 91, behind Clouds, and all three EPs were amongst the highest alternative sellers of 92, and two of them picked up ARIA nominations. The Water EP was produced by Nick Mainsbridge, who also produced Ratcat. He had a good year in 91. They were also managed by Justin Van Stom, who worked A&R at Ruart. It's little wonder that in the early 90s signing spree that Def FX would generate heaps of label interest. They had the connections, a decent following, a distinctive sound, and a star in the making in Fiona Horn. Their first album was Lightspeed Collision, released in 1992 on Phantom. They actually couldn't get the CDs made in time, so it was licensed to EMI just for a CD release. Two singles cracked the charts, No Time for Nowhere at 67 and Spacetime Disco at 70. From their 1992 debut album Lightspeed Collision is Def FX with Spacetime Disco. We'll be right back. Inevitably, they got on the radar internationally. RCA snapped up Def FX for the US as part of a signing spree of new acts. Lightspeed Collision was released in the US in 93 with a very different track listing and included Surfers of the Mind. But unlike Clouds or Underground Lovers, who also had to suffer US versions of albums with mangled track listings, Def FX couldn't even keep their name. They had to change it to Definition FX to avoid confusion with the hip-hop duo Das EFX, who had a US Platinum album in 1992. Still, Def FX were willing to change their name and their album for a shot at success. The release of the US version of Lightspeed Collision followed with some intense US touring, but the album didn't make a huge impact in Australia or the US. Possibly because they spent a lot of time away trying to deal with the US label, they lost their Australian fanbase. In the US, they got lost in the shuffle. They parted ways with RCA after losing Vital Years. They returned to Australia and they started their own label, Cicada Music. And Def FX would soon have their best years. Their 1994 EP Post Moronic featured the single Masses Like Asses, which made it to 95 in the Triple J Hottest 100. Post Moronic itself charted at 43. They performed at the 1994 Big Day Out, where Horn appeared in a see-through fishnet top. They played the 94 Livid Festival and the 95 Alternative Nation Festival. They basically embraced this Australian alternative scene of Triple J, festivals and guitars. This all set them up for their biggest hit, Psychoactive Summer, in 1995. Released on the EP with the same name is Def FX with Psychoactive Summer. Psychoactive Summer was a hit, making it to number 51 in the Hottest 100 of 95 and number 42 on the mainstream chart. The album that followed, Magic, would chart at number 21 in the mainstream charts as well. It was also released by Universal's latest alternative imprint, Grudge. With their biggest hit and biggest album of their career under their belt and a new major label deal, Def FX were all set for a second run. And that's when Sean Lowry, keyboard player and a major architect of their sound, announced that the band was breaking up. Magic would be the last music produced by Def FX. They announced a breakup on the TV show Recovery, and that was that. Lowry leaving ended Def FX, but it didn't stop Fiona Horn. Fiona Horn rounded out the 90s with a couple of curious singles. The first was a 1998 duet called Shut Up, Kiss Me with Paul McDermott. McDermott was a musical comedian who had reinvented himself as a TV presenter and hosted the show Good News Week on the ABC. That show often had Paul singing, and he wrote this original song and invited Fiona Horn to be the duet partner. Paul was kind of hot property in 1998. He also had a cover of Hunters and Collectors' Throw Your Arms Around Me make the Hottest 100 in 98. Shut Up, Kiss Me felt more like a lounge pop song than anything Def FX did, and it certainly wasn't for Triple J. Still, it charted at 48 in the singles chart. Here's Shut Up, Kiss Me.
I was caught by your smile under a blushing moon. You were the only one left there, and words poured like wine over an open wound. You were the only one left there, with sky born blue gray eyes, sky. In bed, you were the only one left there. Cold hands in mine, lips bruised and black. You were the only one left there, with sky born blue gray eyes,
final bit of music from the 90s was a solo single called Let's Go Out Tonight. It was co-written by Simon Austin of Frente. But the track failed to do anything and was more pop than anything she had ever done before. Horn was always super creative and doesn't sit still, but the public was losing track of who she was and what was her musical voice. The CD single for Let's Go Out Tonight features the single version of the song and a slightly longer album version as a B-side. But the Fiona Horn solo album that album version should have lived on, I guess, never came out. She didn't make new music again for another 8 years. Well, here's Fiona Horn with Let's Go Out Tonight.
The sun is gone, the moon is high, a total eclipse tonight. I'm coming over, I'm getting
some hints of it in her music, and in titles like Magic with a K at the end, but it turns out that Fiona Horn was a practicing witch, like an actual modern witch. She had written several books about witchcraft. After music, she went on to be a celebrity and moved to LA. Along with being a witch, she also became a skydiver and a pilot. She appeared on game shows, panel shows, and nude in men's magazines. She was just kind of around. Probably most significant are her many books about modern witchcraft. I've done a lot of reading for this podcast, but I've yet to get around to any of those. No one knew what alternative was in 1992, and Def FX, with their heavy guitars, hip electronica leanings, and impossibly captivating lead singer, seemed like a surefire hit. Hole had already been signed to a major label at this point. L7 were breaking through. No Doubt had been signed. It might be simplistic to compare those bands to Def FX just because of the guitars and the chromosomes, but it showed that there was a market for it. Really, they should have been snapped up by a major label, someone should have thrown $500,000 at a film clip to highlight Fiona Horn, made them work with some taskmaster producer to force a hit out of them, and made Horn look impossibly hot on some album cover. Alas, it didn't happen for Def FX, but Fiona Horn managed to become a star on her own terms anyway. Def FX have reunited without Lowry a few times, the last in 2019. They called it the Never Say Never Tour, so who knows what comes next. There's been no new music since 1996. Sadly, only the US version of Lightspeed Collision is up on streaming. Another reason their status seems to have fallen away is just how unavailable the music is. So here's one you can't hear. It's Masses Like Asses, their second biggest hit from 1994. One of my favourite albums of the era is by a band who finally got their day in the sun in 1992 after a long slog. Weddings, Parties, Anythings, Difficult Loves was a hard-earned win after years of trying to make it. Formed in 1984, the Melbourne band was led by singer-songwriter Mick Thomas. They played folk with punky energy and told very Australian stories. The band was named after a Clash lyric to give you some idea of their influences. Their debut album was recorded independently, but by then they were growing a live audience which led to major labels sniffing around. Warners ultimately signed the band and released The Scorn of Women, their debut album, in 1987. Here's the first single by Weddings, Parties, Anything, Away, Away.
I see you in
The band was Shit Hot Live. They released a live album many years later called They Were Better Live. In the late 80s, the band released three albums in Australia and a mini-album in the UK on Billy Bragg's label. They were acclaimed, they were a good night out, but the hits just weren't there for a major label. After three albums in 3 years, the band took a bit of a break. Warner's lost faith, but the band did a new deal with Ruart, the indie label behind Some Big Hits, who we covered in episode 3. Ruart was now distributed by Warner's, so they were happy to let the band go. They would still make money for them. So Ruart took weddings, parties, anything, and got to work. 1992's Difficult Loves was their first album on Ruart. It was also their first to chart, coming in at number 20. They had made an album with an actual producer this time, hiring Alan Horn, who had produced Paul Kelly and Hoodoo Gurus. The first single was Father's Day. Father's Day is a killer song, well-deserved after many years of struggle, charting at number 29, and took away the award for ARIA Song of the Year. It had a great hook, a captivating story, and a great performance. I mean, weird that I was into this song at age 11, having been through zero custody battles so far. Still, here's Father's Day by Weddings, Parties, Anything.
I haven't always been a single man, and I haven't always lived up here, along with all these other single men, with a ring around the bar and a cigarette put in my beer. And I haven't always been a lonely man, and I haven't always lived alone. And you know I haven't always drunk this much, but hey, before you cut me down, just stop standing in my shoes, 'cause I don't have.
After years of being an acclaimed critic's favourite, they finally had a hit. A second album on Ruart, King Tide, followed in 1993, and this time all was set for a breakthrough. From the album King Tide, here's Weddings, Parties, Anything, with the single Monday's Experts.
Monday's experts, they always know what's best, always tell you what you should have done. Monday's experts, they always know what's cooking, how the game was lost and how it could have been won. When Monday comes around, everyone's an expert in my town. Monday's experts. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The album did okay, charting at number 20. Monday's Experts peaked at number 45. Like that joke about relationship and sharks, if you don't keep moving forward, you have a dead shark in the music biz. Monday's Experts and King Tide failed to build on Father's Day, which was probably a bit of a lightning in a bottle moment anyway, with its hooky riff and compelling original story. King Tide was only a year later. In trying to capitalize on Father's Day, King Tide felt rushed. They soon left Ruart. One final album in 1997 called Riveresque was released on Mushroom, and then the band called it a day. They reunite every so often, but there's been no new music. Violinist Jen Anderson would round out the 90s by forming the Twin Set with UMI's Tim Rogers. There's an excellent best of called Trophy Night, which is a great place to start. Mick Thomas has done a lot of work on his own. His current band is one of my favourite backing band names, Mick Thomas's Roving Commission. It's a track that the Weddos did with one of their biggest international supporters, the wonderful Billy Bragg. From their 1993 album King Tide, here's Island of Humour by Weddings, Parties, Anything, featuring Billy Bragg.
Oh, how I love to read you in the morning.
It's so funny.
Your clever words and funny drawings.
Laugh on nearly.
Well, you've got to have a sense of humour.
It's so funny.
Laugh on nearly.
It's so funny.
It's so funny.
Laugh on nearly.
My mom was laughing. Nobody lives on, nobody lives.
grows like a tumor.
To end, let's have a look at the Australian entries in the 1992 year-end Alternative Independent Charts, whatever the hell that means. So it's worth noting at this point that EPs chart in the singles chart, and what constitutes an EP has chopped and changed over the years. So over in singles, the highest selling alternative independent single of 1992 was by Frente. It was the Clunk EP, which featured Ordinary Angels. Second highest Australian entry was Tumbleweed with their Weed Seed EP at number 5. Third highest Australian is Def FX with their Blink EP at 6. Fourth is the Hard-Ons with She's a Dish. Fifth is Def FX with their Water EP. And the sixth Australian song to make up the top 10 was Tumbleweed with Carousel. So that top 10 had 6 Australians over 4 acts. 22 artists made the top 50 singles. Frente and Tumbleweed would appear again. Clouds, The Hummingbirds and Beasts of Bourbon are back. And there are some interesting new artists as well. There's EPs by The Welcome Mat, Custard, The Cruel Sea and Glide. Over in albums, Red Hot Chili Peppers' Blood Sugar Sex and Magic dominates at number 1. Ex-Saints guitarist Ed Cooper is at number 2 with his album Honey Steals Gold. Of the alternative bands covered in this podcast, the highest is Beast of Bourbon with The Low Road at number 9, although Lemonhead's It's a Shame About Ray, which has many songs written or co-written by Australians Tom Morgan and Nick Dalton, is at number 8. Def FX ran at the top 10 with their Surge mini-album. Australians make up 18 of the top 50. There's albums by Falling Joys, Tism, Clouds and Welcome Mat. But really, it's full of massive Americans like Nirvana, REM, Soundgarden, Pearl Jam and the like. What is alternative and independent anyway? Here's the 7th highest charting alternative single in Australia in 1992. It's the Hard-Ons with She's a Dish, taken from their EP Dateless Dudes Club, released on Waterfront Records, distributed by Festival Records. Here's She's a Dish.
It was easy. I just kissed her. Yeah, she was so sweet. Yeah, she was so sweet. Touched her skin, as wet as a Nile. And she stole my heart, man. A magic kiss, a magic smile.
So thanks for listening to this episode of Just Ace, and welcome to the end bit. This is the bit where I talk about support, and all the support stuff I talk about have links in the description. Last week I talked about Patreon, and this week let's talk about Buy Me a Coffee. It's a site that I often think of as Buy Me a Pony because that's where my headspace is at, but Buy Me a Coffee is a tipping service. I came across it because a couple of podcasts I love use it. It's a way to support someone without an ongoing commitment. You can just buy me a coffee. It's very simple, and that's actually just about it. You can find the link in the description. And if it helps, I absolutely drink that coffee. Of course, there's the Patreon, and there's stuff to buy on Redbubble. There's also important, no-cost ways of supporting the website, like leaving the podcast a review, sharing the posts, and telling your friends. I'll go on about that stuff in later episodes. You can follow along on all my social media. I post photos and notes on every episode on the socials. I'm at the username JustAce90s, which is JustAce90s, just about everywhere. You can also use JustAce90s@gmail.com to send me an email. And there's a mailing list now as well. There's a link to sign up in the description. Okay, next week, we turn back the pages on the magazine that started with a mission to cover more Australian music. It was called Juice Magazine. Thanks for listening. Yeah, thank you.
Start again.